With over 200 flavor notes to discover, Woodford Reserve is more than just a spirit. It's a spectacle for the senses. Toast to 150 years of the Kentucky Derby with the best bet in bourbon. Raise a glass of Woodford Reserve on this monumental celebration.
Live from State Street in the heart of Chicago, you are listening to the new home of the Chicago Bears, ESPN Chicago. And this is Carmen and Yurko, WMVP, WSHE, HD2, Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
High fly ball, left field, four, get it, way out of here. Grand slam, Christopher Morel. And he'll trot around the bases, and the Cubs have opened up a 5-0 lead. Whoa!
Hook Shambi on Marquee last night in San Diego. Boy, that park looks great, man. I want to get to a game out there. They're like 35,000 strong at that park for Cubs and Padres last night. And the Cubs bounced back from a pretty tough defeat on Monday to open up that series with a 5-1 win. I wouldn't say they're all firing on all cylinders right now, but yeah. This Cubs offense, like... So I've got the baseball reference page for the 2024 Cubs up here. Yurk.
Right. And, what do you got for me?
Sound the early, the small sample alert alarms, because it's certainly a small sample. We're talking about 11 games here so far, right? It's a very small sample. We're not even, you're barely at 50, 60 plate appearances. But Horner struggled. He's a wizard with the glove, and you figure he'll be a little bit more like he's been the last couple years at some point. You don't expect a ton offensively out of Nico Horner anyway. He's really struggled. Michael Busch, 97 OPS plus, so slightly below average, but you can do okay with that. Dansby Swanson, 141. These are all their OPS pluses. 141. Christopher Morel, he had the slam last night and the three home runs already. 161. Ian Happ, your guy, the Thunderstick, even though I don't think we can call him that without a home run, but he's offensively contributing to the tune of a 138 OPS plus, and he's been on base a ton.
A ton.
Cody Bellinger, 87, and this offense is still rocking and rolling. You figure Cody will come out of that a little bit. Seiya Suzuki, smoking, 154.
Yowza.
Mike Tauchman, I'm just giving you kind of the regulars here. Mike Tauchman, right. 122. This Cubs offense, man,
that's
right
pretty,
now.
Nobody in the negatives there, right?
Nobody in the negatives.
The White Sox, minus 51.
I got to be honest, Yurk. I don't think up until yesterday, we saw Robbie Grossman's OPS plus going into yesterday. It was minus 51. I don't recall ever seeing something like that. Not 51, minus 51.
Negative 51.
I don't even know how that's possible. The Cubs have scored at least 5 runs in 8 of their last 9 games. You know, stuff like that's not very sustainable. I'm not suggesting it is, but you got to feel good about the way your Cubs have looked, and you got to love young Ben Brown, the pitcher that has been sort of thrust into this spot because of the injury to Justin Steele, right?
Sure.
And he has been very impressive in his last 2 starts. 8 2/3 innings, 10 strikeouts, only 2 walks, and only 1 run allowed. So, very good stuff. And, boy, he's a monster on that hill, and the stuff is excellent. So,
you pitch well. Right? Pitch well, you hit, you get on base, and you play decent in the field, gives you a chance every single time.
Cubs are second in runs in the early going and fourth in ERA, so that's a good combo. They're still not in first because the Pirates are off to such a good start.
Hot start.
But
can the Pirates sustain it, Carmen?
Do you know what the Pirates were on May 1st last year?
I'm going to say May 1st, you had 24 games in the books, or maybe
they
25.
Had 29 games in the books.
29 games in the books.
May 1st last year, what were the Pirates?
I would have them at 11 and 18.
They were 20-9.
29 last year?
They finished 16 games out of first place.
Oh, boy.
So, what you just said.
Yeah. Can they sustain it? I thought you were going to show me the improvement they had from last year to this year. Okay.
They were 20-9 on May 1st last year. I'm not sure they can sustain it.
There's a Pittsburgh collapse coming up.
Well, the Buccos fans out there, but I don't know, man. I don't know. I like their roster. O'Neill Cruz, if he stays healthy. They gave money to Reynolds, right? Didn't they extend Reynolds this last offseason? Another team that's given out a $100 million contract. The White Sox have never done that. I think the Pirates have given out 2. In the last, 2, 18 months or something. Who would it have been? It would have been Brian Reynolds and someone else. Did they give an extension to Ke'Bryan Hayes, maybe? Kevin, does that sound right? They gave out like a couple of $100 million-plus extensions.
Ke'Bryan Hayes got $70 million. Reynolds got $106 million.
Okay, so maybe it was just Reynolds. So, they're extending a couple of their guys.
Two best divisions in baseball. One is the NL Central. The other one, the AL East.
See, I don't know if it'll end up like that. That's what I'm saying.
I got you. You don't know if it's going to end up like that. I'm just telling you the reality of what we have right now.
Yeah.
We are soon to be 10% into the season.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of the weekend, everybody will be 10% into the season. You kind of get to sit back, relax, say, okay, what are my early trends? What am I looking at? What do I see? Who's got oft-injured players? The White Sox, but they're not going to improve any, so it doesn't matter.
Mm-mm.
But, which teams have struggled out of the gate, but with healthy bodies coming back, might be able to do something. So that analysis happens this weekend.
You see what's happening in Baltimore, too. You saw who got called up, right?
Yeah, the guy.
Jackson Holliday got called up. Jackson Holliday is up. He makes his debut in Fenway Park tonight.
They can't tell me that the best players are always playing. Well, that artificial suppression has been here for a long time. We know what it is.
He had to learn second base, Yurko. They had him send him back down to the minors.
Yeah, ridiculous.
For two weeks so he could learn. Do you know they taught him second base in 2 weeks?
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
I hate double talk coming out of general managers and NL owners. They're all full of it.
2 weeks they taught him, Yurko.
Yeah.
They taught him how to play second in two weeks.
Teach him nothing. They taught him nothing. You know what this is, Carm? I'm not even going to mess around. Baseball will be watched, but this Masters weekend.
It is, yeah.
I only got one Masters during the year. This is just 1 week in baseball. It's another week in baseball early on. That's all it is. It's a week in baseball.
Oh, yeah, I'm with it.
We're analyzing. We're looking at it. But this weekend's going to be dedicated to golf.
I'm with
playing
you.
Golf,
you
know, playing golf and watching
golf. It's going to be
beautiful
this weekend. Yeah. I'm with you, Yurko, and you know my love for baseball. Yeah, you watch the Masters this week.
I don't know your love. I know your lust for baseball.
I do have a lust.
You do.
Did you finish your Masters pool yet, Yurk?
Yeah, not yet. Carmen has asked me to stop. I've got two teams. It's $10 a piece, right? I've got two teams.
Okay.
Yeah, so I will be done.
Thank you for...
I have it.
I know it's tempting. Thank you.
It's not tempting.
No, it's tempting to you to turn that over and start working on it during the show.
I mean, nobody cares about my fantasy team. I get it. This is for a dollar or two. So when we take a couple phone calls, I will tease my lineup. You can tell me what my theme is.
You guys,
I'm not going to lie. Carm, your class would be terrible to take. I would hate to take your class. Turn over the paper. Put down your pencil.
I'm looking over at him trying to have a conversation on a radio show. He's done like this. He's looking at his Masters pool. He's not listening to a word I'm saying.
Sylvia Waddle will do the show from home half the time.
That's true. At least you're here.
Tell me what the hell's going on.
At least you're here. I look over there, and I didn't say anything at the start of the segment.
But I was doing it.
In my head, I'm like, all right, he's distracted. He's working on his Masters pool, and I'm trying to talk to him, and I'm getting the And then when I circled back, I look at him again. He's got his head down like this. I mean, what do you want me to do? I'm like, can you please put the Masters pool away and just do the radio show? Look at now he's back working
out. Carm's class.
No, I just finished it up so I can give you my lineups to see if you could catch a theme.
I understand your pain, Carm. I've been in that situation with someone across the way from me, and you're talking to them, and they're clearly texting someone else about something unrelated, and you just look at them, and you wait for an answer, and then there's nothing.
And then there's nothing.
But, it is funny.
I'm not naming names. I'm just saying. There's nothing.
Of course not. I think I know what you're talking about. It is kind of ironic, though, because I can remember being young and in school and not caring. And that's not the attitude to have, kids. Believe me.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
Of course
not.
It is. I stand firmly on this hill. If the teacher sucks and it's boring, that's on them. It's not on me as a bored individual to force my eyes to stay open. If at least Yurko's awake in a class, what would be worse? The kids sleeping with their head on the desk or sitting there working on something, having their brain activated doing something?
You could always count on me, too. You could call on me. It's paying attention in class.
You're a good student.
You're doing something else.
You're a lot smarter than you lead on. And you're
multitasking.
About the School of Carmen here.
Oh. Yeah, the School of Carm.
I mean, I was listening to you. I don't need to look at you to listen to you.
I did sit in class, though, instead of paying attention.
What a transistor radio.
Looking at baseball Beckett's and, Sports Illustrated.
And what do you do now?
I know. But I tell my son, We got to pay attention in school.
I know, but your son,
people say to me, well, you figured it out. You did okay. I'm like,
Listen. Your son pacifies you. Yes, Dad, of course I will. Absolutely.
Pay attention.
Boom. The minute he's gone from you, he's doing his thing. He's doing what he does.
I know.
His personality is being developed, and he's the man in charge.
You know, he's like, Dad, I'm going to play professional baseball. I'm like, kid, I love you, but you're not.
It's great.
Let him have a dream.
You're not going to play professional baseball.
Let his dreams get crushed by himself on its own, naturally.
My son is so funny. I love him. He's like, he's talking to me about this the other day. He's like, all right, if I can't play baseball, I've never once said to him, like, you're not going to play professional baseball. But in my head, I'm like, hey, let's think of something else, you know, like, because I do know a thing or two. He's like, Dad, if I don't play baseball, he's like, you know what? I think I'm going to go and start a fishing charter. And I was like, now we're talking.
Fishing charter.
And I'm like, okay,
a business.
And he goes,
a business.
And he goes, I think I'll start a fishing charter and I'll save up some money and then I'll just start a company like Amazon. And I'm like, okay, I don't know how we get from one to the other, but like the fishing charter thing sounds cool.
How do you think Amazon started?
I don't know. He's 12. And I'm like,
I love that.
And I'm like, I'll move down to Florida with you. I'll live down there. Let's go. Like, let's do the fishing charter thing. Like, I like the sound of that. Like, focus in on that.
You're going to ask the guy to become a deep sea fisherman, offshore fisherman, after he spent a life fishing lakes and ponds?
Well, he could learn, Yurko. I mean, don't you think?
It's a different demon in the ocean. Man.
It is. You're right about
that's
that.
It's a different demon.
Well, I wouldn't tell him that he couldn't follow through on that dream, though. You know, like, pitching in the big leagues, probably a little unlikely at this
point. When's our trip to Florida to go do a little fishing?
We've done it. We fished.
Some tarpon fishing.
That's what he wants to do.
Marlin fishing.
He wants to go on a tarpon run.
Mm-hmm.
So Captain Sam, who me and Danny and our boys, Avery and Gio, we fished with Captain Sam when we were down in Tampa. But we fished the bay. I mean, the kids were little. We fished the bay.
You guys didn't go out deep. You don't want the kids getting sick.
But he does do, you know, he told me, he goes, You know, you want to do a tarpon run, I'm your guy. Right. He goes, we can go do a tarpon run. And Gio does want to do that.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
We need a little strength in the bones.
You do need some strength to fight those tarpon.
Good luck fighting them fish without some meat on the bones.
Yes,
you know?
My friend. You're absolutely right about that.
They'll be tired in 5 minutes.
So he's funny, you know, but I like that he's thinking about some other things, you know, like maybe a fishing charter, maybe owning Amazon. We'll see, you know.
You priced the boat lately?
I have not.
Have you priced the boat lately? Go look at the price of boats and tell me what you see.
Oh,
especially if you're down on the big water.
Joey G. That's a 32-foot skiff. Joey G. He likes hanging out with Chauncey. That's where he's getting it from. Look at this. We got a JD sweatshirt walking by.
Oh, I didn't see that.
He's not even paying attention.
Hey, champ.
He's got a JD sweatshirt. Didn't even notice.
Yeah, he's just walking by the place that he worked for so many years.
Love it. Joey G's in Melrose Park. What up, Joey?
Hey, it's nice. I'm on the phone. You guys are talking to people at the glass.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, what's going on?
Beautiful.
What's going on?
I apologize for hanging up. My doctor called.
That's okay. That's important.
Well, that is very important.
Is everything
important. Okay? Yeah, so-so.
Oh, you okay?
Well,
really?
Everything's okay. Sure. You know, anytime,
doctor. I got about 6 months to live, he told me, and then he's...
Joey,
I ain't got the payment, so he gave me another 6 months.
Of course, I knew Joey was setting us up for something. Yeah, very good.
You tell Dr. Jellyfinger to leave you alone.
Carl, please explain me.
Yes?
Him coming down to the dugout.
Well,
Marussia.
Listen, I think it's a very interesting observation, or at least like moderate, what would you call it? Like a soft prediction for Adam Abdallah and Jesse Rogers to make. I don't think it's totally out of the realm of possibility, Joey. I don't.
Are you talking about now? Is he going to come down? Edgar Falls going to be goodbye?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay, because I was under some confusion that he could come down and sit on the bench and
listen
and watch what's going on.
No, this would be, and Joey, thanks, buddy, for calling. This would be like if they fire Grifol. Like, don't be crazy if Jerry just says to a guy he's still got on the payroll, right? LaRusso's on the payroll.
Yeah, he's getting paid.
Like, don't be surprised if he's just like, you know, back downstairs. And maybe this is their plan.
The only guy with a $100 million contract.
Coming up next, that's right. Yeah, that's right, Yurko. Good call. Coming up next, Jeff Passan will talk Cubs, Sox, baseball, and all the injuries, the epidemic. He wrote about this 7 years ago, and it's only getting worse. We'll talk baseball with Jeff Passan next.
Zoning out on that Zoom meeting? Zoom. Find out what Carmen and Yurko were talking about. Tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
It's an epidemic in baseball, Yurko. It's arm injuries.
And injuries.
We've got the guy, well, in for the White Sox, it's all, yeah, it's leg injuries.
Yeah.
For most of baseball, it's arm injuries. And we've UCL. Got the guy that...
UCL.
Yeah, literally wrote the book. And I mean, I want to say the arm. Jeff Passan wrote the arm, I want to say like in 2017. It's like 7 years ago. It's getting worse instead of better. We get out to the CarX Tire and Auto guest hotline and say hi to one of our favorite guests. It is the one and only Jeff Passan. Was it 2017 that you wrote the arm? Is that right?
2016, actually, but 2016. That's a good memory by you. It's wonderful that people are finally listening 8 years later.
It took a little while. Now they're like, hey, wait, Jeff wrote about this at some point, didn't he? Did you really have been on top of this for some time, Jeff? I mean, can you think back to when you were writing it? And did you think, like, did you think it would keep getting worse, or were you hopeful that somehow, yeah, some way you did? You thought it would get worse?
Yeah, I thought it would get worse because no one was doing anything to address the fundamental issues that were at play. And they were twofold. Number one was the very obvious issue of velocity. And why I didn't think that was going to get any better was because as long as Major League Baseball teams are emphasizing velocity over all else, and they do so in their promotions, they do so in their drafting, they do so in their scouting, and it's the sort of thing that then filters down to colleges when they're looking at high school players, filters down to high school players going to youth baseball when kids are trying to make teams. It's just really bad incentive structure, and unless there was somebody who came out and was a whistleblower of great consequence and said this is not sustainable, there was going to be no change. And the second part of that is the youth baseball, and that's why it was of great concern to me personally, because you know, when I started researching this book back in 2012, my oldest son was, I think, 4 years old at the time, and he loved baseball. And as I kept going, and when the book came out in April of 2016, he was 8 years old. And I just, even at that age, you saw it. It's frightening, but it's the reality, too. When you see a kid who's really young and throws really hard, you're like, whoa, that might be something. There might be something there. And My son's a sophomore in high school now, and he's a pitcher. And, you know, he came home, he went to summer camp. We've tried to avoid travel ball for as long as possible because I think it's, like, inherently evil. And the number of games that kids play in every tournament is appalling. And then, you know, the adherence to the pitch smart regulations that baseball writ large was trying to institute a decade ago is comical. All that said, though, you know, my kid came home from summer camp, and he's 6'1" somehow. Might not be my kid, but that's okay. and he weighed 155 pounds, and immediately he started eating. And he went every day to work out and lift weights in the morning. And his goal was to be 175 by the time the season came around, because he knew the bigger he is, the stronger he is, the harder he's going to throw. And that's not only what coaches are looking for, but if he wants to play in college, that's what he's going to have to do. And it scares me. Like, it does, because I understand, like, The harder you throw, the more vulnerable you are.
Yeah. Like, and you're so right about, like, how even at that level at this point, they're so incentivized. When you hear an older generation or generations talk about, off seasons about the way it used to be versus the way it is today. How much of it do you think that is a contributing factor? Where it seemed like guys, you know, if you were a pitcher and you got to November, you really didn't pitch again until maybe January. And that doesn't seem like it's the case anymore, Jeff. It's like it's right back at it after a couple of weeks off.
Of course it is, because the second that somebody started training hardcore in the off season, all of a sudden he was advantaging himself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're trying to win one of the, you know, in the past 11, then 12, now 13 roster spots for pitchers on a big league club, you couldn't come into spring training and go up against a guy who's been throwing full tilt for the majority of the off season and think that you're going to compete at all, because that first impression matters. You know, guy comes into camp looking really good. Everyone in the front office, understandably, is going to say, whoa, you know, see how this guy looks? Go check out his bullpen. Go check out his live. Go check out how he's looking against hitters. And, hey, let's put a TrackMan on him or a Rapsodo, and let's get metrics on the pitches. And it's all turned into this situation where the data tells front offices more or less what they need to know. And so what's the natural consequence of that, guys? You pitch to the data. And that's why pitch design is a thing now, because there are specific metrics that and specific pitch shapes that players want to achieve, right? Like if you want to start throwing a sweeper, you can mess around with grips and figure out what the right grip is using a super slow-mo camera, and then take a look after every single pitch you throw and say, okay, how close am I to the desired pitch shape that I'm looking for? And you iterate until you get to that. It's boutique pitching. Like, that's where we are right now. And the problem with that is when you are trying to design something without any concern or without requisite concern of how you get there, you may be doing something that your body simply is not equipped to do. And, you know, not everyone can throw a sweeper.
Right.
Not everyone can throw a curveball. Not everyone's body is built to withstand and weather the stress and strain that come with particular pitches. And that lack of knowledge and the desire to achieve particular things that may not align with what your body is able to hold up to, I think is, if not the biggest contributing factor, then certainly a very large one in the grand scheme of things.
So what, if anything, reverses it?
If I knew that, I would be sitting on an island right now, drinking a margarita and not talking to you guys. I will tell you that much. And look, when I started writing the arm, my goal was to solve this problem, right? Like, I am going to talk with enough people, and I'm going to be able to cull enough information that I will come to a definitive conclusion that will help change the course of baseball history. You want to talk about, like, delusions of grandeur. I mean, by the end, I was almost as confused as I was at the beginning. Like, I was more educated. I understood the subject a little more, but I don't think I was any closer to figuring out the solution. And, you know, there are a lot of different answers, and none of them are good. The one that appeals most to me personally is such a toothpaste back in the tube, like moonshot of an idea that I don't know if it's even realistic, but like not trying to get like things were better back in the olden days on you. But I do think baseball was a better game when starting pitchers were a marquee attraction and not guys who were going to go five or six innings.
Yeah.
I think that the way baseball has gone, you have a sport where half of the players instantaneously, because of what is expected of them, are not going to be stars. They might be really good at their jobs, But to me, a star is like a main attraction, right? And we used to look at starting pitching matchups, and to an extent still sometimes do. When there are two super talented starting pitchers, I will tune into the game just to watch them work in, you know, the first five or six innings. But the most important time of the game is quite often the eighth or ninth inning, and the guys who are throwing those innings are failed starters. That's a little bit of a derisive way to talk about a reliever, but it's true.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, you don't start off in the bullpen, generally speaking. So the question to try and answer is there something that both gets us back to making starting pitchers the stars that they deserve to be while still solving the problem of guys getting injured because they're throwing too hard? And, you know, Theo Epstein has advocated for the idea of limiting the number of pitchers on the staff. Now, that in and of itself would not be the only legislation that you would need to make this work. You would need to limit the number of pitchers on the staff. You would need to limit the number of times a player can be optioned so you don't turn your major league roster into a constant train between AAA and the big leagues in order to have guys, who are available to pitch every day. The upshot of this is that if you limit roster size and if you limit options, suddenly teams will start to prioritize over velocity the idea of guys who can go deeper into games and who can stay healthy over the course of a long season. And as we've seen, you know, the teams are really the ones who are driving the motivations of the individual players. If you tell a player, this is what you need to do in order to get paid many, many millions of dollars, the player will say, yes, sir, and then go out and do that. It's hard to unwind that clock. Like, once you throw 100, you're telling me that I only need to go throw 95?
I know.
Like, how am I maximizing my physical capabilities that way? How is this right? And it's, you know, it's a very reasonable question to ask without a perfectly good answer.
I think pitching started to go downhill when we lost the knuckleballers.
Really?
There are knuckleballers these days. I talked with one in spring training, a guy named Corey Lewis in the Twin system, who was not allowed by like his high school and college coaches to really throw a knuckleball, but he got into the Twins organization. He throws a knuckleball like 89. It's like one of the nastiest pitches I've ever seen. By the way, he's on the injured list with a shoulder injury right now. So, 2024 baseball, baby.
Go figure. But I think the jumping off point, I think you nailed it, has got to be, and I know Theo has talked about this, and we've discussed it in the past, that roster limits is probably the jumping off point. And you see if you can correct it from there, if guys realize it doesn't have to be max effort all the time for only three or four innings, and then that's it.
So let's tease that out a little bit, guys. If that is the new reality that baseball wants to manifest, what is preventing teams from saying, screw it, we're just going to develop three-inning pitchers and have 11 guys on the roster who can go three innings at a time, or 10 guys who can go three innings and one long guy, or 9 guys who can go three innings and one long guy and one short guy? And because they have so few innings, we're going to be allowed to pay them less in arbitration because they're not going to have the bulk that's expected in a system that is comparison-based. And all of a sudden, what do you have then? The Major League Baseball pitcher is the NFL running back.
Yeah. Like they become, in a way,
a dime a dozen.
I'm very fungible and just like replaceable. Yep. And
anybody can give you three innings.
And I think the danger in that is what you said. We've already all lost. I'll keep it here. A Burley versus Mark Mulder back in the day. You'd say, oh, that's a matchup I want to go see. Those are two guys that are going to throw seven innings. You know, like you already don't have that anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I said in my column a couple days ago that this is an existential crisis for baseball. Those are big words.
Yeah.
And I don't throw those around idly. I think because there is no solution akin to the pitch clock being the solution for Major League Baseball's slow pace of game. We can talk about the pitch clock and the way that it factors in with these injuries. I don't get the sense that it's a significant issue. Certainly not to the extent that velocity is,
right,
or that spin or that max effort pitching is. But there's no elegant solution to this, because if you do limit the staff, then you need to limit options. Then you need to throw in something like the double hook, which is the idea that if a pitcher comes out before a particular point in the game, you lose the designated hitter. Mm. You have to have all these things in play. And once you have multiple elements to achieve a desired outcome, the number of unintended consequences grows significantly. Like, you're trying to limit unintended consequences when you legislate, and when you have to essentially over-legislate to get the desired outcome, you're just putting yourself potentially in even more peril.
Yeah, good point. Hey, real quick, before we let you go, a local baseball thing. Our very own Jesse Rogers, your good friend, and Adam Abdallah have both floated this idea that if the White Sox at some point this year ditch Pedro Grifol, that they would just very conveniently slide Tony La Russa from upstairs. They'd wake him up and then conveniently slide him from upstairs back down into the dugout. What say you, Jeff Passan? Is that a possibility?
I didn't think it was a possibility that he was going to slide into that dugout in the first place. So I highly doubt it.
Okay.
But you know what?
It's the White Sox.
I highly doubted it a couple years ago, too. And Sox gonna Sox.
Yep, thank you. But it's the White Sox, so you never know. We could, like, literally spend, we need more than just a segment. We could do, like, an hour on this. But you've been on the forefront of all this for a long time. So keep up the good work. And I don't know, maybe we'll all fix it someday with your help and Theo's help. But it's fascinating and sad at the same time. Because for those of us that love baseball, yeah, you know, when you see all these big stars hitting the shelf early, it sucks. And I think you're 100% right. It takes away from the game. So we'll catch up again soon, buddy. Thank you, as always, for the time.
Always a pleasure. It's always mine. Thanks for having me.
See you, buddy. There's Jeff Passan from ESPN, and he really is one of the leading experts on this because he's been educated about it. He's done a lot of research, and he wrote a New York Times bestseller about this 8 years ago, and it's nowhere close to getting any better, and it might still get worse. It's Carmen and York. We'll be right back.
Working from home?
We're back in the office.
Don't miss a minute of Carmen and Yurko. Just ask your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Should we do the lunch rush right here, Yurk? What do you think?
Absolutely. Love the lunch rush.
We had a long segment there with Jeff Passan.
Well, I think we should wait and do the lunch rush then.
You want to wait? You want to, like...
I don't want to do a two-minute one. We can do one and continue it on in the next one.
Let's do it in our next segment.
I want a bigger one. I mean, Jeff Passan, great information.
Very good.
Man's on top of his game.
Yes, this is his expertise.
He's been warning baseball.
He's been warning them.
Warning baseball.
Nobody wants to do anything about it.
Well, because answers... I mean, for them... The amount of pitches that are available through college is what? It's unending, isn't it? What's the difference between one guy that can throw 95 and the other guy that can throw 95? Nothing, usually. The mental makeup of an individual and the intestinal fortitude that one brings to the game, they're almost kind of legislating it out of the game.
Yeah, I guess you're right, because it's like, hey, as long as you can throw 101... and you can spin the crap out of it.
Yeah.
Like, that's all we're really looking for. And we'll use you and abuse you, and that's it.
You and I both know the changing of the speed is important.
It's, yes.
Being a pitcher is important.
It used to be.
But they're trying to make it less important.
It used to be. You know, there were guys that thrived in this league for a long time with fastballs and changeups only. Ask a hitter. Ask a truly accomplished high college level or minor league or professional hitter. What's the hardest thing? And they'll tell you good changeups are the hard. I mean, great curveballs are great.
We act like nobody ever threw 100 before, or nobody ever threw 99 before. J.R. Richard was throwing smoke.
He was.
Nolan Ryan was throwing smoke.
But you got to admit, Yurk, those are, they were few and far between.
Well, I got you. They still threw smoke, and Nolan Ryan was, is in the Hall of Fame, I believe. But
of course.
Nolan Ryan could be hit, too. Nolan Ryan, if you take a look, I mean, they put the barrel of the bat on the ball against Nolan Ryan. He wasn't dominant every single day he went out there.
Guys who threw hard, to your point. Nolan Ryan, Bob Gibson, J.R. Richard. Who else from that era would you say?
Some would say Juan Marichal.
Juan Marichal. Seaver threw pretty hard, right? I mean, not quite like those guys. But
not
I mean,
like those guys, but he did
but
throw
like,
hard.
But
Randy Johnson threw hard.
Yeah, and I was even but I'm kind of going
You're
back
going
even
back.
Like a little
You're
bit more 70s old school.
And 80s, yeah.
Like Steve Carlton threw hard.
Like but slider was his weapon.
Yeah, slider was awesome.
His change was.
But why? Why did they throw 300 innings every year? And they
like
did,
machines.
How did Nolan Ryan and Bob Gibson throw 98?
The expectations were there for those guys to do it, and they conditioned themselves to do it.
I think, yeah, it's not like just the velocity. It's everything else that's being asked now and how they're training to do it, and their bodies like simply can't respond to it or hold up to it.
It's almost like the same thing you see in sports as well now that you didn't see back in the day. A lot of guys, you know, blowing out their knees, tearing ACLs. You see so much more of that nowadays, and you didn't get that in 70s, 80s as much.
Can't pull
but
fat.
When you did, it was over. If you had an ACL in the 70s or the 60s, it was done.
Yeah.
Because right, the surgery was barbaric back then.
We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll do the lunch rush. We got some other fun stuff for after 2. Cross-check at 2:35 with Waddle and Sylvie. It's Carmen and Yurk. We'll be right back.
Zoning out on that Zoom meeting? Zoom. Find out what Carmen and Yurko were talking about. Tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Going to do the lunch rush, Yurk. You ready? You ready to rush? Let's lunch rush. We should do the lunch rush while we're eating our sandwiches that you owe tomorrow since the White Sox scored 7 runs.
Yep.
An explosion of offense. Explosion.
Maybe we will, Carm. I have a feeling, though, by 1:50 tomorrow, my sandwich will be gone.
Mine's going to be gone, too. Abdallah will be back tomorrow to do the lunch rush. He's off today. We have Kevin Zipak in to do the lunch rush.
Oh, how about
Let's
that?
Do it.
What's going on, fellas?
What
how are we doing?
What's up, Zipak?
I think we should have gotten sandwiches today. That's just me. Shout out Viking Scott
Come
for the
tomorrow.
Donuts.
Yeah, well, at least you got a donut.
All right, let's start here with some Bears. I saw a article in Bleacher Report written by this fella, Matt Holder, floating the idea of the Bears enlisting Ryan Tannehill services for the 2024 season. Of course, we saw a little Tyson Bagent last year. He wasn't bad. I think he acquitted himself pretty well.
Yeah.
Made some big fans that called into the shows.
Oh, yeah. Sure did.
How would you guys feel about Tannehill acting as a veteran mentor to one Caleb Williams?
Fine. Got no problem with it. No, he's not. It's not a threat to Caleb. He's literally a backup in case something, God forbid, goes wrong. I'd be fine.
Yeah, break glass in case of emergency. That's what he would be there for.
I also don't mind if Bagent would have to be the answer for 2 or 3 games like he was last year.
Interesting.
I mean, I'd be okay with that, I think.
Okay.
I guess Tannehill would be better, but...
A little bit better.
Yeah,
I think he'd be a little bit better.
I agree
mean, at
with
least
you.
He's been out there and he's seen him fly much more than Bagent has been.
You're right. I'd be fine with that. I had no problems if the Bears add Ryan Tannehill to this roster.
Does going out and signing a vet like Tannehill signal how serious they are to compete? Because like Bagent would be like, yeah, he could go out there for a few games, stopgap guy. But if I go out and get Tannehill, isn't it like... If something happens, God forbid, to the number one pick, at least this team still could be on track to make the playoffs.
I guess you're right about that. Like, he could keep them afloat longer than Bagent would be able to. So I see what you're saying, Chris, maybe. And they should be thinking that way. Like, and I think they are.
If
everything we've gathered.
To the starter, we need a solid quarterback to be able to step in for at least a 3-4 game stretch like happened last year.
And maybe even longer. And like Tannehill would be the better option. So, they should be thinking that way. Yes.
All right, a little baseball here in transition to a more broad question. The Orioles are calling up the number one prospect in baseball, Jackson Holliday. Chris was very proud that he knew who his dad was.
Oh, but he's.
He was tearing.
I was happy that I knew.
Of course, you know who he is.
Wait, why would you say of course?
Because his dad was one of the
fantastic player,
20 best baseball but players of the last 20 years.
I don't sit around reading Prospect magazine.
But you're still a sports fan, and you've been in the sports radio industry for 15 years.
What are prospects before they do something?
Suspects.
Yeah, there you go.
No, I thought you were saying he was proud that he knew that his dad was Matt Holliday.
Yes, that's what he was.
Yeah, of course you know who Matt Holliday is.
I thought his dad was Vonnie Holliday.
Why is that? Of course.
Anyway, he number one prospect in baseball. He was tearing it up down in Norfolk. And back in Norfolk.
What about Norfolk?
He's a very, very hyped player, obviously. Steven Strasburg, of course, officially retired. Extremely hyped when he was coming along. Bryce Harper,
yes,
you know. Who are some of the most hyped prospects you can remember in your lifetime?
Harper, for sure. Of probably the most recent vintage, I'm not sure a baseball player has been quite as hyped. Like, Jackson Holliday is probably the most hyped prospect since Harper. In about 2018, 2019. Don't you think, Yurk?
Rushman's right up there with him, too. I mean,
Rushman? Yeah, but not like this.
Bryant was hype.
Yeah, Chris Bryant was. He was also a little older. He was a college player who was very accomplished, and he was a little bit older.
Strasburg?
Strasburg's a good one. That's what Kevin was saying. Those guys also were very dominant college players. I'm thinking more along the lines like Harper was a phenom from the word go. As a teenager.
And he was on SI in high school, was he not?
Yes.
He got the LeBron treatment.
Holliday is a teenager. Ken Griffey Jr. was a teenager. Like, those guys are... A-Rod was basically a teenager, right? You're maybe 20.
Yeah, he came out of high school. From Miami, went up to Appleton.
And I'm saying he was in the bigs by about 20. Guys.
Even younger than that.
Was he younger?
His contract in September, he had to be called up.
Oh, did he?
Yes.
You know, so those guys, Yurko's right. He was, oh my God, he played 17 games as an 18-year-old.
Yeah.
Worked in the strike year. By 1995, he's in the big leagues, and he's 19 years old. So you're right. Like, those guys. Like, Holliday is in company with those guys right now. And then his brother is draft eligible next year. Did you know I was reminded by friend of the show, Reed Rooney, because of the new anti-tanking rules in baseball, do you know the White Sox will not be eligible for a top 10 pick next year? Did you know that?
I did not know that.
They might finish with the worst record in baseball, and they can't get a top 10 pick.
Why?
Because of the new anti-tanking rules.
Well, I mean, they're just bad.
So who gets the first pick then?
They don't allow the non-revenue sharing teams to go top 10 in back-to-back years. The White Sox have a top 10 pick this year. So they can have the worst record.
And they'll pick 11?
And pick 11. Or maybe it's 9. They might not be able to be in the top 9. They could be, the highest they could be, I think, is 10th. They won't have a chance at Ethan Holliday. They could be the worst team in baseball this year without a chance next summer, of the best prospect in America. It's hard being a Sox fan, man.
Yeah.
It's damn hard.
That's probably one of Jerry's rules.
No, because that wouldn't benefit them, really. You know, it's a baseball, because they're a big market. They don't, you know... They're trying to prevent any of the big markets and the revenue sharing teams from having that top 10 pick in back-to-back years. You know, the teams that have to pay. That's why they put it in.
Yeah, but the Sox don't pay. That's why whoever created that rule, the big teams, created it so the Pittsburghs of the world, back when they're lousy, the Kansas Cities, can't keep collecting top picks.
Well, no, the Sox can't receive money. That's what they're trying to avoid. They want the teams that are receiving to be eligible. The teams that are receiving are eligible. The teams that do not receive are not eligible for the, you know what I'm saying? For the back-to-back years in the top 10.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
There's just
goofy.
Some language in there that I've got to understand. Yeah.
What else, Kev?
All right, it's that time of year in Chicago, the Chicagoland area, at the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center this coming weekend.
Oh, yeah, I know it's coming.
The Triple Exotica Convention.
Yeah, good times.
Nice.
Any interest? You guys going to be there?
Unfortunately, I've got a full slate this weekend.
Yeah. I'll not be able this weekend.
To participate. Shame.
No. I'm playing golf on Saturday and Sunday. I got a little a rally happening in Northwest Indiana that I'll be at Saturday afternoon.
A rally.
Excuse me?
What?
A rally. I got a buddy of mine who's running for town councilman.
Okay.
Really?
St. John. Right.
Yeah. Was going to a rally this week?
Right. A little rally. You know, a little fundraiser.
I love it.
Raise the funds.
You should probably say what it is next time, not just saying we got a rally this weekend.
Well, again, that lets the mind, the individual mind, run rampant, which I don't mind.
Here it comes.
And if you're offended because of that, too bad.
That's the lunch rush. Classic Yurko. As only he can do it, folks. We're back in 2 minutes.